We're back on The Takeaway, and you've been telling us about your experiences with breastfeeding.
I breastfed. It took a bit of adjustment and diet changes to make it work for the both of us.
I breastfed because that's what my mother said to do.
It felt natural and helped us bond.
It was private and special bonding time for us, and it was easy and inexpensive too.
I breastfed my daughter for the antibody benefits, but the pain was excruciating.
I never breastfed my kids. For me, I found it to be just gross, and that's just my opinion.
I was hauling around a pump, ice pack, and pumping in supply closets, and even in a public park during the winter at one point.
My daughter was an enthusiastic eater. I was convinced her first words would be, ouch.
Kudos to all the moms that did it, are still doing it. I think you're amazing for doing it. But for me, I just wasn't comfortable with it.
I breastfed my babies, but I do not take to shaming mothers who don't want to breastfeed or can't breastfeed. The last thing that a new mother needs, all the other stress of having a baby, is to be shamed because she doesn't or can't breastfeed.
In 2011, the United States Breastfeeding Committee declared August National Breastfeeding Month as a way to promote and support breastfeeding. But the decision to breastfeed and access to resources around it can vary a lot depending on your race. Black Breastfeeding Week, which falls at the end of this month, was started by Black women to acknowledge the many specific challenges that Black families face when it comes to breastfeeding. In fact, in the United States alone, white educated women are more likely to breastfeed and for longer periods for reasons that are deeply rooted in our nation's history. And I have two people here with me to talk about the racial disparities in breastfeeding and how it can become more accessible to all of us. Kimberly Seals-Allers is a journalist, a strategist for maternal and infant health, and author of The Big Letdown, How Medicine, Big Business, and Feminism Undermine Breastfeeding. Kimberly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Andrea Freeman is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Hawaii and author of Skimmed, Breastfeeding, Race, and Injustice. Andrea, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
So, Kimberly, let's start with you. We hear a lot about breast is best when it comes to breastfeeding. Can you remind us what we actually know about the differences in what does it make a difference in how a baby is fed, whether it's formula or breast milk?
Well, we do know that breast milk is an unparalleled source of infant nutrition. And, you know, just our bodies, this is how our, you know, our species has survived for generation by generation by generations. And so I think that the scientific evidence, the body of evidence overwhelmingly proves that breast milk is superior. I think that we intuitively know that something that's being made in a factory can never replicate something that's kind of moving and changing. I mean, breast milk changes according to your body's needs and your infant's needs and what you ate. And it's a real kind of relationship-driven type of fluid. And so I don't, you know, the issue has really not about whether breast milk is better than infant formula, because infant formula has never been proven to be superior to breast milk. The issue is, to your point, can we make it accessible? Because having something great that women can't offer to their babies is really not the end game for anyone. Yes, the scientific evidence is clear over time, and formula has never been proven to be superior to breast milk in any way. But how do we take that information and now make it something that's actually accessible?
So let's talk, Kimberly, a little bit about the racial divide in breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. What does the data tell us?
So the data tells us that racial disparities have lingered for over 40 years. Pretty much as long as they've been capturing the data, there's been a disparity. So that means that so many fewer of Black infants are receiving that optimal standard of nutrition. And that's something that should concern us all. The other thing that is really important to consider is that in this country, what we're learning about Black women and their birth outcomes is very much connected to breastfeeding, because Black women disproportionately give birth to babies who are too small, too sick, or they give birth too soon, right? Our rates for preterm birth, twice as likely than white women, low birth weight babies. So because of how Black women actually give birth, and this is also regardless of socioeconomics education, those babies need breast milk more. So while we often have a conversation about lifestyle and quote-unquote choice, we can talk about that, but for Black women whose babies are disproportionately being born too small, too sick, and too soon, they need breast milk more, those babies. And so we see that that is also connected to the Black infant mortality rate. And so we really can't have the same simplistic, breast is best, it's a choice conversation when we're talking, and particularly about Black women, because there's so much more at stake.
So, Andrea, I want to bring you in here because when we started here on the show talking about this issue, I immediately started thinking about access and, you know, when you can breastfeed and where you can breastfeed and how women can breastfeed. And you've studied Black women in particular and how they have different rates of breastfeeding than white women. Tell us about some of your findings.
Okay, thank you. I would also add that this disparity has existed from slavery. And there have always been structural reasons for this that have, as she said, nothing to do with choice. So we can look at things like the United States government being the biggest purchaser of formula in the United States and then giving it out free to people who receive WIC, that's for women and children, disproportionately Black women. We can see the welfare shift forcing women to leave the home when they have infants, and that makes it impossible for them to breastfeed. We have a lack of restrictions on formula marketing in the United States, whereas every other country has agreed to sign on to this World Health Organization code. The United States has not because of its close relationship with the formula industry. We have marketing that happens through hospitals and pediatricians that doesn't even look like marketing. And we have very weak laws that would protect women who want to pump at work to keep breastfeeding. We have a lack of parental leave from work. Basically, I could go on and on with all of these structural factors that have nothing to do with whether a woman wants to breastfeed or not.
Well, Andrea, when I think about that, I think about, you know, the ability, for example, like you said, to be able to pump at work. I think you need an accommodation to do that. You need the time to do that. You need a place to put what you've pumped, right, in the meantime. I'm thinking about women who are making minimum wage jobs, you know, who are working shift work, for example, who don't have the ability to do that. How does that impact the ability to breastfeed?
Oh, very much so. And the other thing you need is you need to be paid for those breaks. So sometimes you might find a little bit of accommodation because the law requires it, but it's actually not enough to make it possible, right? So maybe you can take the time, but if you can't afford to take the time, then that's the same thing as not being able to take it.
And Kimberly, we were talking earlier about how the disparity in breastfeeding between Black women and white women has its roots in slavery. And I'm wondering, how has that history impacted how Black women think about breastfeeding today?
Yes. Yeah, so in my work on the ground and my strategy work, working many, you know, in communities across the Southeast, Detroit, Philadelphia, particularly in matriarchal societies, what I've observed is like this idea that breastfeeding is something that we did for other people, something that we didn't do for ourselves, something we were forced to do, something that reminds us of a time that we're trying to forget, has been passed on generationally, often without a word. And so many older relatives who are very influential to mothers, many of the grandmothers and aunties who raised us may now become a source of childcare, and they have no idea about how to care for a breastfed baby. They don't know how to handle breast milk, and do you shake it? Can you microwave it, et cetera, et cetera. And so because of that disconnect, it's created a cultural disconnect from us feeding how we feed our children today. And so we see, you know, I was a first generation breastfeeder, but we see this idea that you're pretty much a pioneer in your family trying to break down, you know, walls and barriers and educating. And it's a lot. It's a lot. And so we do see that that has lingered. Certainly, you know, we think about the WIC influence, this idea that something is government endorsed, quote unquote. Well, it must be good. And it also must be noted that many times WIC does not give enough for the whole month, and that women at the end of the month are either forced to stretch the formula, which obviously compromises its nutritional quality, or they're forced to go pay that shelf price, which is now inflated because of all the subsidies that the infant formula companies give to the government and to to the hospitals. And so it's a setup all the way around.
So I want to, Andrew, I want to bring you back in here because I want to talk a little bit about, again, similar to what we were just saying with Kimberly, how does this play out today when it comes to racial disparities? I know I had just having a conversation with a woman of color yesterday who was talking about her struggles to breastfeed. She said when she was in the hospital, they focused a lot on breastfeeding. She felt guilty because it just wasn't working for her. And she ended up going back to the hospital and begging the doctor to just please give me formula because it's not working. She's a Black woman. She's a Black woman of Latina descent. So I'm wondering, do these issues play out today, Andrea, when it comes to racial disparities and maybe even shaming of women who are unable to breastfeed?
Absolutely. And one of the layovers or legacies that we have from slavery is also stereotypes. And in slavery, there was developed the idea of the bad Black mother. And that was used then to justify separating women from their infants, from their children, blaming Black women for their desire to care, the supposed desire to care for white infants and white children and neglect of their own. And we've seen that go throughout history and continues into the present. And it justifies, even now, the idea that hospitals and doctors don't give as much attention to Black women in the hospital. They don't provide the lactation resources. Communities do not have these resources. Kimberly knows a lot about this. She's talked about first food deserts. I talk in my book about first food swamps and the way that people are inundated with formula and assumptions that underlie the treatment that people receive based on their race.
Mm-hmm. And these disparities in care are really important to look at. If you look at historically, who has been kind of the marquee brand for breastfeeding support? It was La Leche League, right? A very powerful, important woman-led organization. However, La Leche League was white women, not even working white women, right? So there's been this disparity of support. And hospitals, yes, are ground zero, but a hospital for a woman in this country is only 2 or 3 days. So if she leaves a hospital, which she may have had a lactation consultant, and then goes back to her community and it's, you know, a virtual quote unquote desert of support, then she's in a setup for failure. The other thing that we have to look at is this biological connection between stress and your ability to lactate. And what the studies show is that stress will literally limit your letdown reflux, which is that thing that your body does to release your milk. And if we aren't talking about social stressors,
And let's be honest, yeah. I mean, social stressors for women of color in particular,
exactly.
Black and brown women are severe.
Severe.
And not to suggest that white women don't face social stresses, but we have additional stresses that are economic, that are social, and on. And so, right, cultural, exactly.
Things that we deal with day to day, microaggressions, you know, in our work life and things like that. And so if we're looking at stressed out women and then wondering why they are not breastfeeding for any meaningful duration, well, the answer is very clear. And so we really have to help people understand that relationship within their bodies and how do we kind of address that, create an outlet for that, and while we actually deal with this disparity of support to make sure that in our communities, there are places for us to go. And that is changing. And so we really have to amplify those resources that are available to Black women from other Black women in their communities.
Andrea, what about breastfeeding, perceptions of breastfeeding in public? I mean, I'm starting to see more places where women can breastfeed. In airports, for example, there are little cabanas or cubicles set up so women can go in and breastfeed. But we also know that this is something that's very contentious and for better or worse. And often it's white women, I think, that are allowed to do this perhaps more than women of color. Are women of color and Black women in particular shamed when they try to breastfeed in public?
Yes, absolutely. And this goes back again to the history of this country and where Black women can feel comfortable and not comfortable. So even if theoretically you are protected, you are able to breastfeed, that doesn't account for the pushback that you're going to get from other people, mostly white women and other people who just don't feel like you belong in that space or you should be there breastfeeding. So I think in this very particular case, law can't do much to protect against the kind of vigilante culture that we have around this.
And also, we have to look at the history of Black women's bodies. I mean, we can't ignore the body politics. Like, Black and brown women's bodies have always been more controversial, more provocative, hypersexualized, you know, over time. And so we can't ignore what our bodies mean in the historical context as well. So that is why I believe when a Black woman is breastfeeding, it is such a revolutionary act, because of we are defying all the stories that have been told about our bodies, and we are doing something that, you know, perhaps even white women don't want us to do. And this idea that we are bringing attention to our bodies is something that other people would love to say when we're simply trying to feed our children.
Want to close out here, Andrea. Any final thoughts on what can be done, whether it's law or otherwise, to help make this a better experience for women of all races?
I think it's really important to remember that all of these laws and policies that make it difficult for Black women to breastfeed come from a close partnership between the formula industry and the government, something we saw last year when we saw the U.S. government threatening Ecuador for trying to put forth a resolution in the World Health Assembly to promote breastfeeding. And we see that the government is basically in bed with the formula industry. And for that reason, it's very hard to change any kinds of law or policy. So the work that Kimberly is doing and others that is grassroots is so important, because we can't rely on the government, which is under a regulatory capture, to actually do anything.
Andrea Freeman is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Hawaii and author of Skimmed, Breastfeeding, Race, and Injustice. And Kimberly Seals-Allers is a journalist, a strategist for maternal and infant health, and author of The Big Letdown, How Medicine, Big Business, and Feminism Undermine Breastfeeding. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.